In this episode of the Tech Stack, it's NVIDIA at $4 trillion. That's a big number. China, chips, and the coming AI tsunami. Next. Today is Thursday, July 17th, 2025. And for those of you that are new to us, the Tech Stack webcast is all about a trusted team of professionals that we like to call the technologists, having deep tech conversations that cut through the hype to deliver actionable insights, hopefully from top tech analysts backed by proven research and deep experience in the field. And with that little tee up, it's a big one. Joining me for today's inaugural webcast are my fellow technologists, Marco Cipetta, principal analyst at Hot Tech Vision and Analysis, Francis Sadeco and Jim McGregor, principal analysts, plural, from Tirius Research, and Mark Vina, CEO and principal analyst at Smart Tech Research. I'm your humble host, Dave Altavilla, principal analyst at Hot Tech Vision and Analysis with my buddy Marco. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks,
good
Dave.
To see you again. Good to see you.
Great.
And what's that? What was that, Jim? Did you have something already to quip?
No, I didn't say anything. I just said thank you.
I was ready to jump all over you there, kid. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Why don't we go around the horn real quick and start off with a question. What are you excited about with respect to the Tech Stack webcast? Let's keep it quick. Let's talk lightning round here. 15 seconds tops. Why don't we start with Francis? Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, Dave. Yeah, really what I'm excited about is talking to you guys about not just the what of what's going on in the tech industry, but the so what and the yes but. And that's really what's interesting to me, is being able to delve into those different angles that maybe people don't necessarily get to see those different perspectives.
Hey, man, we got a lot of perspectives here. Jim, you're from the same den as your buddy there. Why don't you let us know what you think?
I'm just excited to be working with you guys and to be bringing a qualified, technical, and experienced voice to the market.
Awesome. Good stuff. Mark, jump on in, kid.
Very quickly, I've known you guys for some time. I think the pleasure of working and dealing with you guys, I'll use the word dealing, is that you all have unique opinions, and we're certainly not going to agree on everything, but I think we'll bring different perspectives. And this is a category, you know, technology and the work that we do, I think companies value the fact when they get different perspectives. And I think I'm excited about bringing that to this podcast every week.
No shortage of opinions here for sure. Right, Marco?
Absolutely. You know, and like these guys, I thrive off being around other people, and all of these guys have such great technical insight. So I'm looking forward to learning and just discussing everyone's different opinions, you know, as we go on this journey with this new show.
Amen. And it is a pleasure to be working with you guys. I'm excited for this endeavor. We do have varying opinions from different areas of the market to different levels of technological depth in all the different technologies and markets that we serve. So looking forward to creating a palette of opinion here amongst us on the cast. So good stuff. It's great to be with you. Let's dive in and talk about the topic at hand, NVIDIA's $4 trillion market cap. That is a mind-boggling number. China, which is an interesting topic as of late, as it relates to the AI landscape, and then other chip players in the business, and the coming AI, we call it a tsunami, but you know, whatever you want to call it, the growth trajectory is just crazy the way it's looking right now. And it's exciting. It's an exciting time in tech. We're all having a lot of fun. We're not getting a whole lot of sleep, you know, running flat out, but it's a great time to be in tech for sure. We have a lot to unpack here, and certainly it's not just about NVIDIA. It's, you know, about a lot of different other players, but let's start with the 800-pound AI silicon and platforms gorilla, if you will. What does NVIDIA's current valuation really mean? And what does it mean for the rest of the AI ecosystem that goes along with it? Mark, why don't you help us out with that one to start?
Yeah, so I guess my response, Dave, is that, you know, $4 trillion obviously is a big number. It's a staggering number in many ways. I remember, you know, 25 or 30 years ago when IBM thought it could get to $1 trillion back in the early 90s, and that was a staggering number. But I think there's a lot of things that if I'm Jensen, I probably wouldn't get too excited. And the reason why is that, A, it's a number, and most CEOs, good CEOs, and Jensen is a good CEO, doesn't get fixated on a number and, hey, you know, the party's over, let's stop what we're doing and let's just celebrate. Because markets are dynamic. A lot of euphoria at NVIDIA, at least in the marketplace, over the decision by the government to let them sell their lower cost chips, H20 stuff. You know, the winds blow all over the place. That could easily change 6 months from now. So that could be a big problem. And by the way, as we all know, the revenue hit they took during that period was pretty significant. So, you know, that will have a factor here. The other thing that concerns me about NVIDIA in their kind of race to even, even make that number a bigger number is the infrastructure piece, which they don't have really direct control of. I mean, the power requirements of growing these data centers and getting them to blossom all over the country, and there's a lot of, obviously, activity going on, requires a massive amount of electricity. And right now, there are tailwinds from a regulatory standpoint that support that. Hey, that, and by the way, you just can't put that infrastructure in overnight. That takes years. So that could be a potential tailwind if there's some changes in the political landscape. So again, great achievement. I think it's terrific. But there's also the law of big numbers, you know, and they have, what, roughly 90% share in the data center market. You know, the only way you can keep that number up is you got to continue to innovate, which they clearly are doing. So I don't think there's an issue there. But typically in any market I've dealt with, when you have a market and you have 90%, especially as the market's expanding, that number tends to go down. So again, want to give credit where credit's due, but they've got their challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, you know, it's never a given. And as you said, any good CEO realizes that for sure. Marco, what do you think about that? And let's talk about, and we'll get to the Tereus team next for sure. What do you think about the rest of the, you know, what this means in terms of the rest of the ecosystem, the AI market in general, and I guess sort of the validation of this big number?
Yeah, I mean, anything adjacent to AI is obviously going to grow as well. Like, I think we have a few more years of growth. And even if NVIDIA does lose some share because there's additional competition, in terms of total volume, I think they're going to continue to increase for at least a couple of years. The last few product launches ramped faster than the previous one. So it just shows that there's still acceleration in this space. But anything adjacent to NVIDIA or anybody doing, you know, data center infrastructure, I think it's also going to lift them. So we need the high-speed networking. As Mark mentioned, we need the power. We need the complex timing chips to keep all these things synchronized and working. We need HBM memory for these high-powered GPUs and accelerators. So, you know, I think NVIDIA in the current space maintains their dominance for a while, but everybody around them kind of gets lifted because NVIDIA can't do it all on their own.
Amen. Yeah. A rising tide raises all boats, as they say. Absolutely. Tereus team, why don't you guys jump in there? Pick who goes first.
I'll take a different take on this. And I think really what that $4 trillion mark means is that we've seen a change in sentiment in the industry. You know, over the past 1 to 2 years, especially in Wall Street, everyone is looking for, oh, are we reaching a plateau? Is it coming to a point where, you know, AI is going to taper off? Is somebody going to come in and take NVIDIA's market share? So A, I think it means that Wall Street and the broader ecosystem has realized that this train is really just beginning. I mean, we just did a new forecast and, you know, we expected a 19x increase in just tokens. That's just text, punctuation, words, blah, 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 you know, from 2023 to 2024, the actual increase was over 500%. We're looking at going from 660 trillion tokens generated in 2024 to over 80 quadrillion tokens. And that's just text. We're just really starting what I call video AI, you know, with image generation and video generation. And that's going to go through several phases to where within about 2 years, we're going to get to a point where we're going to have real-time video. That means real-time video agents, real-time gaming, real-time movies and entertainment generation with AI. So the growth, I think that that $4 trillion mark means, A, that growth is not stopping, and we would agree with that. We don't see any end to that growth, at least through 2030 and probably well beyond that. The other thing I think it means is that people realize that NVIDIA really is leading that charge. It's not just about them being a leading GPU vendor. You know, we saw this at GTC with the introduction of Dynamo, you know, basically an operating system for the entire data center, with co-packaged optics, you know, moving to a higher speed networking, you know, not to mention, you know, going to Blackwell to have 32x performance improvement from one generation to the next. So we keep seeing this innovation across the data center. You know, Jensen said that, you know, the new unit of compute is the data center, and NVIDIA is doing that. And, you know, he also likes to say that NVIDIA innovates at the speed of light. And I think we'd all agree that I don't see anybody else innovating faster than NVIDIA across the stack.
Interesting. Yeah. Hey, Jim, totally agree with that that last sentiment for sure. I think what's impressive about NVIDIA is the execution they bring to the market, and then also just the breadth of platform capabilities that they bring to the market. It's not just about the silicon, it's about the platform solution. You know, whether it be a Blackwell rack design, you know, mapped out for everybody, or you know, some of the different services they offer for the enterprise in terms of, virtualization, digital twinning, things like that. So impressive stuff. Francis, what do you got, buddy?
The only thing I'll add is, I'm joking, but not joking, but with $4 trillion valuation, I'd be concerned about some key NVIDIA people starting to retire and losing some losing some brain trust. But all joking kind of aside, I think there's really two things that I'm looking at. You guys have all came up with really, really great points. Maybe the only things I would add is, as we're looking at this, to Marco's point, it's going to be natural that NVIDIA is going to lose market share. Right. That's just the way these things go. And the key here is to not become like a Nokia when Apple came in, and where they completely lost track of where the market is going. And they went from a 40%, you know, number one market share to non-existent because of the smartphone revolution. And I don't think that's going to happen, to Jim's point, because of the continued innovation and focus that NVIDIA has. So the key for me is, as long as the market is growing fast enough, and NVIDIA is also growing fast enough to offset, really in real numbers, the market share percentage, that's not going to be an issue for NVIDIA. The only other thing that I would look at too is, you mentioned a rising tide floats all boats. With AI, the thing about this is it's actually multiple tides that are happening, Dave. So, you know, you obviously have kind of the Uber scale AI that NVIDIA is driving and pushing for, and that's important. But there's also going to be multiple bifurcations in the market, especially as AI gets adopted by the enterprises. And it's going to scale from, you know, smaller, you know, SLMs that are very highly focused in what they're doing, all the way up to the Uber scale stuff that NVIDIA is obviously pushing hard for. So you know, those are the things that I'll be looking at, and what that allows you to do is actually, with those multiple tides, have multiple tiers of and segments of companies to take advantage of this, you know, $4 trillion market cap that NVIDIA has been able to basically open the market up with.
Yeah, totally agreed. And, you know, I think my big takeaway, and it sort of dovetails from what Jim was talking about, is that, you know, this is really an explosion of the application use case for AI. Yeah. And we are in the early innings, right? This is something that is fledgling at this point. Let's face it, it just came out of, you know, in mass generative AI a couple of years ago, right, is what it all started to kick in. But the application use case and the palette of potential opportunity in virtually every area of business, our personal lives, what have you, is just beginning. And so I'm excited. I think there's a natural growth trajectory just based on that alone. All right, so let's move along to a more, you know, sort of a, I guess maybe a volatile topic. I'm not sure. Just this week, Jensen Huang, CEO of NVIDIA, was able to seemingly convince the Trump administration. There are other factors at play. I think Huawei's influence in China is probably at play here as well in curbing that. But the Trump administration, he convinced to allow the shipment of Hopper H20 chips back into China again. The stock jumped right away, of course. And because those import restrictions or export restrictions, I should say, were a big dent in NVIDIA's armor for a little bit. How important is China, though, and why? You know, the answer isn't quite as obvious as I think some folks see, certainly the mainstream folks. They're more concerned about national security. Is that really a concern in this case? And what are your thoughts there? Tyrius team, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. I think there's multiple aspects here. One is I think there is a competitive element with Huawei for sure. I think that, you know, obviously the Trump administration is very big on domestic or U.S. competitiveness globally. So I'm sure that was a factor. But the other factor is on the national security side. I would expect that there is probably at least some proof points that were raised that said, okay, look, even it's already the H20 capability is already being, they already have access to that kind of capability one way or the other, whether it's from Huawei or not, to the earlier point. But two, that we are so far, you know, even things that maybe we don't know in the public sector that are available, that somehow, you know, the administration's been convinced that that we have capability that far exceeds what would be provided with H20s. So I think those are the two main factors that potentially let this go through.
Yeah, yeah. GIMPed chips, if you will, for lack of better words, H20 for sure. So we're not giving them the latest and greatest Blackwell that they could, you know, potentially, you know, reverse engineer, what have you. Jim, what are your thoughts in that area?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I am against this protectionism. I think that the entire industry benefits when the entire ecosystem, and we've spent over 25 years making the semiconductor, electronics, AI, you know, the entire ecosystem, a global ecosystem. And, you know, if we get in this protectionism mode, we stifle innovation and we're going to push people in different directions. I mean, just look at wireless technology. 5G was the first technology where we had one standard globally from the start, you know, and it took us generations to get there. So, and you know, if we try to shut them out, they're going to develop their own solutions and they're not going to be using U.S. technology. So that's more funding that's not going back into U.S. research. You know, it's just a bad situation. I think you need to enable the entire ecosystem to mature. And quite honestly, you know, politics aside and everything else, you know, technology, innovation, and, you know, society, you know, evolution really benefits when you bring everyone together and let them work together.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of AI developers in China. Mark, what are your thoughts here?
Well, you know, my inclination is like Jim, I'm not a big fan of protectionism. I just think it tends to backfire over time. Not to turn into an economics discussion, but I just think that tends to be a very deflating type of effect on the economy and on growing technology. And it's clear that we have to really take the shackles off AI to grow. And this is very much like the internet back in the late 1990s, the early 2000s, where there was actually legislation put in place to encourage the internet to grow. And now that did have implications, and that could be a completely separate podcast. But the reality is that, you know, things have to be unshackled so you can maximize its potential. The challenge in NVIDIA space, and this kind of goes back to the first observation was made, is that NVIDIA is really Jensen. Jensen is NVIDIA. And Jensen was really, by force of personality, was really able to, frankly, implement all of this. And he's playing both sides of the table. You know, he's playing to the Trump administration. He's playing to the to the China government, because he's a good CEO. He knows he needs Chinese revenue. I mean, it's a different company if all of a sudden you take Chinese revenue out of the NVIDIA portfolio. The challenge with that is that Jensen is a relatively young man. He may not be around forever, frankly. And, you know, if you replace Jensen with somebody else, does that change the dynamic here? So, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think NVIDIA, you know, will navigate through all of this. But the Chinese revenue piece is critical to them to grow. And I'm just, by the way, not just about, it's not confined to AI. You can't find a product category in the technology space that doesn't have some sensitivity to the impact of the Chinese market.
Well, yeah, and it's absolutely. not just the revenue. I mean, think of what the impact was of DeepSeek to the market. It's the developers. It's the innovation. We really need to have that collaboration, that openness, that ability. I mean, DeepSeek really changed the dynamics of our market by bringing the cost of inference, the cost of retraining down significantly, enabling a lot of people to do stuff with an open model that they couldn't do before.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that everybody got spooked with DeepSeek, but when you think about it, it just enables us to do more. And the insatiable demand is still there. It's not going away. So,
Dave, if we had this podcast already going, we would have been able to tell people that, because that's exactly the reason why. To me, that's exactly the reason why I've been really motivated in doing this podcast with you guys, is exactly those kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Marco, why don't you bring us home with your perspective on this real quick, and then we'll move along.
So I'm going to take things down like to the most basic level. Like if we're capitalists in the US and I build the best product, I want to be able to sell it wherever I want to sell it. You know, Jensen's not harming anybody by selling his product to different countries, no matter what the politicians say. So I think it's important. I'm in line with Jim. That this technology will benefit everybody. The more widespread it is, the more accessible it is worldwide, the better for the total ecosystem overall. And it's a net positive, not only for NVIDIA, but for AI and data centers and compute in general.
Yeah. You know, I'll throw in my two cents real quick, but I'll be a little slight bit of a contrarian on this, with respect to national security. And by that, I mean, I don't like government's involvement so much in export restrictions and controlling things. I think we can leave it more up to the tech companies to help us keep our IP, our critical IP, protected, things that are of a national security concern, what have you, things that we need to protect our IP from an engineering standpoint or what have you. The tech companies know how to do this well. And so leave it up to the experts. You know, don't need a bunch of people on Capitol Hill messing with it so much, because it's, you know, that politicians getting in the way is always a little dangerous.
Well, to your point, half the time there's so much churn over on Capitol Hill that even the staffers that are underneath don't have enough time to develop the domain knowledge to make the right calls. And that's why I actually have been encouraged. Amen. where multiple times tech CEOs have been invited to be part of councils to provide that expertise, which I think is necessary. But I do agree with you, Dave. There is a national security, especially with certain key technologies, right?
Sure.
And we do have to be careful of that. But it has to be done in a pragmatic way, that makes sense to be able to balance those factors.
Dave, yeah. can I jump in one pithy comment?
Please do.
Yeah, I mean, Francis said something that is absolutely true, and that is that if you look at the senior government leadership, again, not to get into a broad political discussion, but the reality is that at the senior congressional levels, the senior Senate levels, most of those folks are well over 60. They don't use technology. They don't use ChatGPT. Do you really think Mitch McConnell uses ChatGPT? I don't think so. And so the reality is that once you, and all of us use these tools, and I've been playing a lot with video imaging tools, not just the text tools and text prompt tools that exist out here, but the real potential is at the video level. I mean, we're just scratching the surface, by the way. And I just don't think until you start playing with the tools, you don't really have an appreciation for the power of what AI is going to be able to deliver a year or two from now. So, you know, it's just my two cents on that perspective.
Totally agreed. I don't think you get a lot of arguments from tech analyst community on that one. So good stuff, Mark. Thanks everybody for that. Let's move along, keep this thing moving crisply here. What other chip companies do we think, should we be watching for, players that will hopefully break out or are in the process of breaking out now in this wild ride? Marco, why don't you start us off, buddy?
I'm gonna be a boring answer, unfortunately. I think you really have to watch AMD. We just had their Advancing AI event about a month ago, and if you track their progress over the last few years, you see them going from the GPU to rack level, and now next year they're obviously going to have total pod level, and they're on a, I'm not gonna say they're on the same trajectory as NVIDIA, because AMD has a lot of work to do on the software side that NVIDIA's had in place for many years already. But they build a hell of a chip. And to have this much effort being put in to develop the software and have these larger solutions, and the market simply is always clamoring for alternatives. Like, NVIDIA can't make enough chips to satisfy demand. So somebody has to take that space. And I think a large majority of that's going to be AMD.
Yeah. Good take on that. I'll jump in since we're under the same roof and sometimes drink a little bit of the same Kool-Aid. I think you're spot on with that. I think AMD got it in the acquisition of ZT Systems. I think Lisa Su saw that coming, said, this is how we have to compete. It's not just about the chip. It's about the platform, it's about the rack, it's about the pod, it's about the architecting the data center. Absolutely, just like what NVIDIA is currently doing. And so they put the tools in place to get that done. Watch AMD for sure. It was interesting, that they built, I forget which quarter it was, where they finally gave a projection of $4 or $5 billion of AI revenue, which was basically, MI300 Instinct GPUs, they showed up on the scene with a capable chip, and the market couldn't get enough NVIDIA chips, couldn't get enough Hopper chips at the time. And so that was just mopping up the scraps. Mm-hmm. Now they're going to have, eventually here, they're putting together the pieces of a full rack scale solution. And that makes them a very credible threat in that regard. And then the other thing I'll toss in real quick is I like some of the stuff that's going on in the edge, whether you think of Qualcomm, whether you think of little accelerator companies that are popping up now. We have a client we work with called Accelera. They make these really powerful, very power efficient little chips that go on PCI Express card or even M2 modules, believe it or not. And they do inferencing much more efficiently than NVIDIA's GPUs in certain applications like machine vision and things like that. So there's some fascinating stuff popping up as we learn how to architect silicon solutions for AI. Terry's team, what do you got? Who should we watch for? Who's the big hit next?
Well, I think you mentioned a few folks there, obviously Qualcomm, AMD, but even companies, to your point, Dave, as AI gets pushed towards the edge, and it will, it's just because that's one of those tides that are just pushing all the way out. You've got companies like you said, Accelera, but even like Synaptics, for example, they're doing a lot of great work on AI on the edge. And as that continues to mature, the AI that's happening on board of those embedded solutions is actually starting to get to the level of where AI was originally at the big chips, a couple years ago. So that's just going to continue to evolve as well, and that's an opportunity. But even outside of kind of raw chip makers, you've got companies like IBM. Who, especially on as enterprises start looking at AI, are building a lot of really great solutions with how you take, maybe public capable or generic general capable models and use cases and applying them to the specific needs, data, use cases, you know, regulations and so forth, compliance of the enterprise. So I think, I mean, they're doing everything from even they have their own chips, obviously, but that's getting pushed through their mainframes, which are highly embedded, especially in mission critical and financial type transactions, which need a lot of that kind of reliability, you know, compliance and so forth. So I think there's definitely a huge, you know, bow wave of just multiple vectors.
Yeah, not to mention quantum, which they're big into, and that's a whole different discussion for
another. Yeah, that's another podcast. Especially when you put quantum along with AI, that starts just increasing the different variables there.
Yeah, it's like opening Pandora's box, literally, right? Yeah. So, Jim, why don't you bring us home? Who should we watch for? Who can the market make big money on next if you place your bets?
Well, first off, I don't think it's just the when we look at the data center, it's not just the processor guys or the accelerator guys. It's also going to be memory. That AI data layer with memory and storage is critical. Micron has done a phenomenal job.
Amen.
You know, they were behind the curve when it came to HBM2. Now with HBM3E, they kind of rose to the top. I mean, they're still second to SK Hynix, but they're already qualified on HBM3E with AMD's MI350. They're already qualified, or they're already have their HBM4 solution for NVIDIA, which will be the Rubin generation starting next year. They've got very high speed storage solutions. So, I mean, I would single them out. I would definitely also networking, you know, companies, especially the ones that are working with NVIDIA on the co-package optics, companies like Coherent and I believe Lumentum and others. You know, I think anybody in that networking space, Arista, I think will be a big company there, possibly Cisco as well. You know, I think all these networking companies have a potential to really accelerate there. And then on the edge, I would say I would look for the companies that are enabling the market. So Qualcomm with their AI hub, Synaptics with their open tool set, you know, anybody that's really enabling the ecosystem and trying to create that ecosystem is going to be critical, especially for the edge markets.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Qualcomm is one that we didn't dive into too much, but they certainly have what impresses me with them is the software enablement of their silicon solutions and the tool sets that they're bringing to market right now to enable development on their platforms. Definitely one to watch as well. Good stuff for sure, guys. Let's wrap this up. We've only got a few minutes left here, but let's wrap up quickly on the forecast. I don't know if you can do this quickly, Jim and the Tyrius guys. I know you've got some numbers in your utility belts, but you know what? We're on this huge trajectory now. Is this trajectory, this level of lift, going to continue for ad infinitum, or what are we talking about? I know you talked about, you know, the absolute exponential growth of token generation, token requirement for processing. What do you think we're looking at?
Well, the easiest way to reference this, and it's funny because we've seen AMD and NVIDIA both kind of reference waves or super waves of AI. You know, first it's the data center, and then it's the enterprise, and then it's the edge. You know, going through these waves, each one of these markets, each one of these applications we're looking at is going to kind of go through kind of a natural S curve, where it's going to be a huge growth period. It's going to kind of level off. The problem is that we have so many of them stacking on top of each other. We don't see an end to that exponential growth or that exponential demand anytime in the near future. Just looking at the data center, once again, we're looking at 80 quadrillion tokens by 2030. And then we're starting to see video, you know, that video AI component really kick in. And we expect that's going to surpass token generation by mid-2027. So within 2 years, you know, even though that, you know, we've really all hyped up on tokens and agents and everything else right now, we're going to see video creation, video content creation, and video applications for AI surpass, you know, just that text-based AI in 2 years. And that's not surprising. I mean, you had to consider that we had Transformers introduced in 2018. We had LLMs with Gen AI introduced in 2022, late 2022. We had Agentic AI introduced in 2024. I mean, it just keeps accelerating that level of innovation. And we don't see an end to that. So yeah. I don't see us hitting an overall S curve anytime in the next 5 years at least.
Yeah, well, let's not forget, Jim, too, mixture of experts and reasoning and so forth. When you have AI creating its own intermediate tokens to do what it needs to do in each of those phases.
Well, that's part of that quadrillion. But yeah, and also the fact that, that's all part of that agentic AI. You know, we're actually going to have, and this is an interesting fact, because of agentic AI, where you have agents using agents and creating their own tokens, we're going to actually have more AI users than we have people on the planet within the next probably 18 months.
Yeah, that's amazing. And let's not forget even physical AI, robotics, that's just beginning as well. Big stuff.
Absolutely.
Mark, the two Marks, what do you got real quick? We only got a couple minutes left here.
I think what I mentioned earlier kind of applies here. The next big things are getting all these data centers and accelerators and things connected. I'm huge on Micron as well. I think, you know, every HBM chip they make, they're going to sell. They're absolutely huge. One of the leaders in NAND storage as well. And there'll be nothing but an increase in demand for storage, especially to what Jim's saying. If you're going to generate video, you have to store it somewhere. And video is, you know, one of the larger consumers of storage space. But, you know, companies like Broadcom that are already big leaders in the networking space, they're just going to continue to grow as well. And just the more aligned they are with NVIDIA, I think the better. And I believe Cisco, and I may be incorrect on this, but I believe Cisco jumped right on board with NVIDIA Silicon Photonics solution. And I think that's going to be huge, maybe not next gen, but, you know, going into 27 and 28. So there's, you know, there's lots of stuff in many adjacent segments to look forward to.
Mark, bring us home, buddy.
Yeah, I'm incredibly enthusiastic about the category, like all of you folks. I'm not sure it's an S curve. I think it's more of
hockey stick.
I'm not even sure that's fair. It's more like a roller coaster in New York, since I have a backdrop of Las Vegas in the background. But I would just say a couple things real quickly. I think Synaptics obviously is a company to keep an eye on. They just did a smart, not an acquisition, but a hiring of a CEO from Qualcomm, a guy that we all know that I think will bring some bona fides to their silicon capabilities, especially in the AI space and the connectivity space and the smart IoT space. And frankly, I think that when you look at AMD, I know it sounds like a non-sexy answer, but the one thing about AMD is that they've always been the value silicon provider. They were like that with PCs years ago. They were like that with their graphics cards. And, you know, and they do have, you know, you put them, combine them with their silicon expertise now in the AI space. You know, the markets are always looking for a value alternative. And NVIDIA, of course, plays at the premium side. So AMD could be a very attractive company, especially when you talk about token creation. And I think some of even the forecasts that the Tyrius guys have teed up, that may be conservative. That may be Ronald Reagan conservative.
Oh boy, here we go back to politics again.
I had to throw that in.
That's good stuff. And hey, Jim, thanks for throwing a dart at it. No end in sight, at least for the next 5 years. I would kind of hop on board with your estimation on that. And I think we've got a lot of growth trajectory left here for the foreseeable future. But let's wrap on that, gents. It's been a pleasure. Great getting together with you. Thanks for your time. It's always great catching up with you. For our viewing and listening audience, thanks so much for making the Tech Stack part of your day. Folks, please hit those like and subscribe buttons right now. That'd be great. And use the handy on-screen QR codes, if you would, to connect with us. You'll see them somewhere in the corners. I don't know. Mark will figure that out. And until next time, we look forward to catching you on the Tech Stack.